the point is that Apple, as an example, and that, you know, I think we didn't we discuss this in a prior interview. Apple said, oh, we're not going to scan your computer and report it to HQ, meaning to Apple. We're not going to do that. And so we suspended that project, which they did. But what they didn't tell you was that they did a proof of concept. They just showed you how easy it is to turn it on and scan your computer and report it to HQ. And they said, oh, we're going to turn that off.
Yes. I mean, it's like you pay for this computer, but you don't own it. And what about your data, right? Because they're training their AI on your data. They're storing your data in the cloud. And then, like, who owns it? If I live in the EU and my data goes into OneDrive, is it actually stored in the EU or does it end up in the US, which has all kinds of other laws?
Oh, it was funny. I used to say Apple was the worst. And at the moment, it's shifting because then now we embed ourselves into this where the AI can be your 1984. Remember in 1984, the TV is watching you? So the TV will tell you, you're not doing your exercises today. You're supposed to do 10 push-ups and you did not do that today. And you say, yes, sir, Mr. TV.
Hey, everyone, it's David Bumble back with the amazing Rob Braxman. Rob, great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Rob, I've said this on our previous interviews and I'm going to say it again. Whenever I talk to you, you make these predictions. And then I think, okay, I need to go and get my tinfoil hat because this can't be true. Like you were talking about years ago when we did our first interview in 2022, I think it was, you said the iPhone is going to be able to sense the environment. And I couldn't believe what you were telling me. And it was like literally a few weeks later and crash detection came out on the iPhone. And then like this happened multiple times. Then you were speaking about client-side scanning and how governments are going to, you know, check all our devices and encryption will be pointless then. And I also thought that's not going to happen. But yet since that time, it's happened more and more. We have the EU voting for this kind of stuff. Fortunately, at the moment, it's not here yet, but the EU might still push that through. But Robert, I want to steal your thunder. I want you to tell us, what are you seeing coming down the line in the last bit of 2025 and going into 2026? And, you know, what are the problems and what is the advice you've got for us? So for everyone who's watching, I'm going to put a bunch of timestamps below the video. Jump to the parts that you're most interested in. We're going to talk about a bunch of things. Rob, hopefully you can tell us about why you hate Mac or Apple or why you love Windows or et cetera, et cetera. But Rob, I've done enough talking. Take us on this journey. What are your predictions? And then, you know, tell us how we can better protect our privacy.
Well, you know, things are happening in the UK, right? The digital ID, right?
Exactly.
You must know about that being in the UK.
Yeah.
So I watch the trends and I'm of course very, very concerned about all this. But the problem is that we don't even realize the new digital ID that's already on your devices. And that's going to be a big part of life. And that's part of what we can talk about later on. It's the digital ID is the security chips that you find on your Windows computer. There's a thing called the TPM, the Trusted Platform Module. Then you have on the Pixels, you got the Titan M2 chip. Of course, on Apple, there's the Secure Enclave. All of them have digital IDs. And what people realize is how that's a big part of it. It's not just security. There's also a connection, and I can get into the specifics of that. But the digital ID is actually tied to not just identifying your device, but it's tied to this trend towards this client-side scanning that, you know, I keep talking about, that people discount. They've discounted me for years. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten so much pushback on issues like, Apple isn't really doing any client-side scanning because they claim they're not. Yeah. And yet you go to your Mac and you say, can you turn off this scanning software called Media Analysis D? And you can't turn it off. Go try. If you turn it off, it starts up again because it's a demon process. And then this year, at the beginning of this year, Google turned on the system. What do they call it? Google System Safety Core? I can't remember the first part. I think it's System Safety Core, which is actually the same thing as Media Analysis D. So, and then you, of course, I got all these videos that I did about, you know, Windows Recall and Copilot and all this. And it's like, don't you even realize what's happening here? Don't you even understand what's happening? When, and I know you did a video on Windows Recall, David. And, you know, I've done many videos on this. I actually even made a video on duplicating what Windows Recall did. I actually made an AI and I showed you that if you can capture and see what you see on the screen, that the AI can actually recognize all that. So I actually wrote a little program using a local AI to see all that. And it's the key logging and scanning the photos and see the content, seeing the context. And I said, okay, you can do that. And then people come back to me and say, yeah, but you know, that's private because Microsoft says so. And Apple says same thing. It's private. But you know, one of the things that is crazy is when Apple said, oh, we don't do client side scanning, you know, with this CSAM business. And no, I won't try to define CSAM on your channel either, no. David, because, no. You know, I get demonetized every time I define what CSAM is. So you can put CSAM at the bottom, I guess, right? Just without defining it. Just put the letters on there.
Yeah, we'll just, it's bad stuff. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So the point is that Apple, as an example, and that, you know, I think we, didn't we discuss this in a prior interview? So Apple said, oh, we're not going to scan your computer and report it to HQ, meaning to Apple. We're not going to do that. And so we suspended that project, which they did. But what they didn't tell you was that they did a proof of concept. They just showed you how easy it is to turn it on and scan your computer and report it to HQ. And they said, oh, we're going to turn that off. So they turned up the communications module. But they left the scanning portion. And now, what do we learn today? We learn, you're right, I predict things, and because it's so obvious, that Windows Recall is that same client-side scanning tool that Apple made on steroids. And here's the funny part, that Apple is, of course, using OpenAI for Apple Intelligence, which is exactly the same thing as Windows Copilot. So they'll just come up with some variation on this. The point is, all of these architectures, even Google Gemini, they're all going to do see what you see technology. That's what I call it, see what you see technology. So they're going to watch your screen, and all of them do this. And I made several videos explaining the Apple system. It's the same exact thing as what the Microsoft AI CEO was talking about, the, you know, about see what you see, hear what you hear, and all that. And they're going to do the same thing. So see what you see, hear what you hear. So the computer knows you. Okay. So I think that's a given. Everybody knows that's what's going to happen. The only limitation is people are saying, well, but they're not taking my data. They're not sending my data. And you know, my naysayers, they're very quick to bring that up, that there's no proof. There's no cybersecurity proof that the data is leaving my computer and going to Apple, to Google, to Microsoft. And you're right. I didn't say the data was leaving. I didn't say that. There is no need for the data to leave. That's what Apple proved. Apple proved that this client-side scanning thing that they came up with several years ago, the idea is for the AI to discover. The AI discovers whatever they wanted to discover, in this case, to see if you're doing something illegal, and then report it to HQ. They don't need to see the data. They just need the report. The problem, and this is what I've been pushing with this, you know, this is why I did a video also on the client-side scanning issue with the EU and what that meant. But of course, you didn't say that the UK already has that client-side scanning law. So
yeah, I don't know. Does the UK? The UK doesn't currently enforce client-side scanning, do they?
They don't force it yet. They said
yes.
What did they say? Well, because of the technology, it requires, you know, to ramp up.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So they wanted companies, because of the laws that they implemented, they wanted companies to check what people are doing, but the technology doesn't exist. So they can't physically implement it at the moment. Is that what you're saying, right?
Well, the technology is there, but it's not turned on and it's not enabled. And obviously you can't just turn it on for the UK. You either turn it on or don't turn it on. It's not going to be a UK specific thing. But I believe the way that it's structured is not necessarily turn it on now. It means you have a responsibility to turn it on at some point. And I don't think there's like fixed deadlines or anything on there.
So Rob, the one that comes to mind, right, ignoring the UK for the moment, is the EU, because that's been in the news quite a lot recently. It's been pushed back, but I believe the whole idea with the EU implementation is if they decide to go ahead with this, which could happen at any time, they are enforcing client-side scanning on all EU citizens, where they will be told if you're doing stuff that you shouldn't be doing. Let's leave it at that. I think the governments can decide overnight that they want this. And you saying the technology now exists on Apple, on Windows, and on Android as an example. Is that right?
Right. And that's really related to the original Apple product with the client-side scanning that Apple proved conceptually can be done. And just to make sure that we understand the structure of this, you know, how do you actually implement this? So the way that Apple originally introduced the concept, your computer knows you, because in the case of Apple originally is scanning your photos. So it knows the content of your photos and it stores it in the, you know, media analysis. It actually stores it file by file. So every media document has a corresponding matching record of what's in the photo. And this is called, so basically it's the AI for image processing. It's able to understand what's in the photo. And of course, YouTube does that now. You know, for example, if you had some sort of weapon on your video, YouTube would know that. If you have, you know, some product that you're showing on your channel, YouTube knows that because it recognizes the objects on your video. And so this technology, so this like image recognition.
It's like image recognition, right? Is that what you mean?
Right, right. But it's more sophisticated than that because it actually identifies objects and creates a verbal representation of the objects. So it can actually identify, for example, what you're doing, your mood, your facial expression, and do it in words. So it's going to show in words, oh yeah, this person's smiling, this person's angry, this person's this and that. So that's the technology of AI. So AI then stores that and all the characteristics of that into a file in the Apple version of Media Analysis D. And that's now on steroids because obviously Windows Recall have proven that you can actually, and I've proven because I actually duplicated this program. I actually wrote a program to show this, that it can recognize what's on screen. It can recognize the text, OpenAI and the routines for doing, recognizing how you can make it into an AI companion assistant. So you can tell it to go to a website and book you an appointment to, you know, your doctor or log into some site to book your reservation at a restaurant automatically. And it does that by reading the screen, and it doesn't need any special instructions. It doesn't need anything because it just reads the content of the screen, takes the text and integrates it into its responses. So it's text-based. It's image-based, it's all of the above. It's basically see what you see. Media Analysis D doesn't do that. Media Analysis D is a very basic media analysis. And that's the same thing with Google System Safety Core. But that's the old stuff. The new stuff is the one that Windows Recall is doing. And OpenAI has their own test programs that show the same kind of things that Windows Recall is doing, Windows Copilot, and which is, of course, going to be integrated into Apple Intelligence because Apple Intelligence uses the same OpenAI. So it's the same tools and algorithms for doing all that. And once they do that, then now the AI sees everything and knows you. The concept of all of these technologies with See What You See is that the computer is going to behave differently now. It will know you. My point earlier about what this is all about and what the risk is that Apple has proven that it's not a big deal to ask the AI to say what it knows about you. I mean, how difficult is that? let me tell you some of the craziness that has come up. And, you know, you've heard of BitLocker, for example. So I got a new computer and I installed, I did a dual boot on it, but talking about the Windows part of this, I had this new computer. And as I was going to do dual boot on it, I said, let me turn off secure boot. And then when I turn off secure boot, the drive locked up. And this is a brand new computer here. The drive locked up without any way of recovery. And I didn't know that now that these computers required BitLocker to be on by default. And then I didn't understand, you know, why is secure boot locking up? And then I realized that the secure boot was now tied to the TPM, the security chip. So now if it detects any kind of change in BIOS and your configuration, it locks up the drives. So the reason they're locking up the drive is because they're keeping your content now on the computer. Your brain is now duplicated on the computer because it sees what you see, knows what you know, and hears what you hear. And basically you interact with it like it's another person that's a clone of you. So because of that kind of data, the security implications that are huge. So now they say, well, we got to lock up these computers. So they start locking it up, putting TPMs and all this. And that's why Windows 11 requires a TPM. And obviously Apple computers already have the equivalent of a TPM with Secure Enclave. And then Google has that. So because they want to lock up your data. So in all of this, you say, well, you know, my data is locked up, it's secure and all this. So you say, well, what? There's no problem. There's no problem, but there is a problem because while you're trying to protect your machine because you don't want somebody to break into it, which is even a false story, as you will find out with Windows. But the AI can be asked. Apple already proved this. All you have to do is ask the AI. How hard is it to ask the AI, hey, AI, is this person doing something illegal? If so, report it. What? How hard is that? It's already proven that they can do that. They just turned it off. So if the EU, as an example in this case, says we're going to turn on client-side scanning, how hard is it for them to say we're going to turn it on? How many steps are needed? Not much. But Apple Intelligence, Windows Copilot, Windows Copilot was turned on only after the debates in the EU. So that's actually pretty new. Apple Intelligence is not yet turned on. So in a sense, they couldn't implement it yet, at least not immediately, because the technology was just on the verge. But the problem is that it's on the verge of actually going live. It's on the verge of being implementable. You can turn it on pretty much, you know, immediately. So that's the fear.
So do you think, just a prediction, right? Do you think client-side scanning is going to come to like the US, Europe, other countries around the world?
Well, it's not a question of is it going to come. It's already there. Your computer is already scanning you with Windows Copilot, with Apple Intelligence, and Google System Safety Core already initiated part of that. And of course, with Google Intelligence, is active, it's going to do the same kind of scanning, see what you see technology as it would with the other two operating systems. When it happens, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be available. So the question now is, will your computer report you? That's really the only thing we're talking about here. Will your computer report you? How hard is it? And, you know, David, you know, you ask me if I can predict things, and I look at things on a programming problem basis. It's like, how hard is it to program that? Is it hard to program? If it's hard to program, it's not going to happen. If it's really easy and you make it easy, as this is, I mean, you can ask your own Copilot PC about you. And you say, what did I do last week? And your computer tells you what you did last week, right? You can do that with Copilot. How hard is it for somebody else to ask the AI if they put a little linkage in there to say, well, what did he do last week? How hard is that? Is there a technical reason why you couldn't do that? Especially for a computer that's logged in to Microsoft using a Microsoft ID, so they even know who you are. So how hard is that to make that kind of linkage? I mean, the computer is already talking to HQ constantly, right, with telemetry. How hard is it to turn that on? So my mentality in life is, as I understand computers, is if you can do evil with it, it's going to be done, because they're freely, it's just the way it is. It's when you put a capacity of a computer to do something, someone will use it for that purpose. It's just the nature of the beast.
So in other words, technically it's possible. It's already here. If you enable Copilot or Apple Intelligence, et cetera, on your devices, they are monitoring you. They know what you're doing, the AI and the local system. But the next step is governments are going to leverage that. And that's what you see maybe coming in 2026.
This is the part that I want to focus on, is the fact that it's invisible. Nobody said that using the AI to scan you had to be announced. Nobody said that using AI to ask what you did last week or what you're doing now is something that has to be publicized in any kind of way. I mean, why? Why would you need to do that? I mean, you know, what would to stop somebody like Apple, Google, or Microsoft to just do it quietly? And, you know, if there's a subpoena from a government that says, I want to spy on this individual, turn that on. I want to see what this person is doing and have the AI tell me. So the process that I'm trying to discuss here, or the process I'm trying to explain here, is that your data doesn't have to be exfiltrated from your computer. There's no need for that. This is the thing about client-side scanning. All you have to do is ask the AI anything. And if the device can sense the infrastructure or whatever's around you, that can be communicated to whoever's doing the asking. And you already know that you can ask your computer this. You just mentioned at the beginning of this video that Apple is sensing the environment. And I mentioned that in an interview, and we discussed that. And so now here's a little different case, whereas Microsoft is able to sense what you're doing on the computer because it's doing the see what you see technology. So it's seeing what you're doing on the screen. It's seeing all your interactions on the screen with what you type and all that. There's a little bit difference here with an iPhone, because an iPhone has so many sensors. It can actually do infrared. It can do all this. It can sense the environment. And you can ask the AI what's in the environment. I mean, that's the crazy stuff about the technology here. You can ask the AI to say, what's around this individual? What's, you know, what are you sensing? How many people are in there? You can sense things by asking the AI. The AI can tell you, and your data never leaves the device. So this is the kind of a lie that we hear from big tech. They say, oh, your data will never leave the device. Well, I know that. I know that. That's not a problem. Yeah. It's not about the data leaving your device. It's about the AI who controls it. See, that's a problem here. We have an embedded AI. Somebody can give instructions to the AI. Does the instructions to the AI have to come from you? Well, obviously, Apple proved that the instructions can come from Apple. They already proved that.
And the EU is pushing this anyway. Sorry, go on.
That is exactly the point of the EU thing, is saying, well, by the way, that there's a little bit of a question here, is why is it that the technology push of the EU, the UK, Australia, and all these, and even the US Congress, they're all pushing the same things. And they're pushing client-side scanning. Why are they all pushing the same thing? You know what? I don't believe in coincidence here. I do not believe in coincidence. I believe that somebody says, this is a technology we need to introduce to the people, and they need to accept the fact that AI is part of their lives, because then now we embed ourselves into this where the AI can be your 1984. Remember in 1984, the TV is watching you? So the TV will tell you, you're not doing your exercises today. You're supposed to do 10 push-ups and you did not do that today. And you say, yes, sir, Mr. TV, I got to do that. So now we have the same situation here. You know, this is exactly 1984. In an AI world. And this is going to be quiet, David. I make a prediction here, but how do we prove this? The thing is, the technology allows it. So whether it's public or not, it's doable. How hard is it for a three-letter agency to say, we're going to pay you to give us a little hook to the device. So we identify the device, and it's easy, Microsoft ID, Apple ID, Google ID. And then we identify the exact device using the security chip, because the security chip has an identity, which fortunately you can beat, but there's an identity. And you can now identify both, you know, the device by user ID to the platform and the specific computer, and even know the setup. Is it running Linux? Is it running Windows? Is it running, you know, at the Google OS? Is it running a standard Google OS? What version of Apple OS is it running? iOS? They even know that, and that's actually known from the TPM. So now you have this environment where they can even identify the specific device, and then they said, oh, this device has AI. So let's ask the AI the specific questions, because we know it's watching.
So last time we picked on Apple, right? So let's pick on Microsoft, because Microsoft has done some terrible things. I think a lot of people would say recently, like they're killing Windows 10, so much for saving the environment, a lot of people would say. They're forcing you to use a online account rather than a local account, and they're making that even more difficult. So you've mentioned this TPM thing a lot, and you've mentioned some other things in your videos. Rob, perhaps you can, let's pick on Microsoft, right? Because I don't have to enable recall on my computer. But are you saying if you started, that they're pushing this AI thing onto all these devices, and Microsoft is one of the companies that are, you know, that seems to be pushing towards AI locally, that they now want you to talk to your computer through AI rather than using it, kind of thing. So it's this whole drive towards AI. So let's tell us why Microsoft is so bad, because previously we spoke about Apple being so bad.
So Microsoft, as you know, implemented Windows 11 with the requirement that the computer have a TPM and, you know, to disengage with, you know, older computers that don't have the power to do AI. So if it doesn't have an MPU, then, you know, it's not. So that one of those computers they want to support on Windows 11. And the point is that, you know, they're pushing for an AI capable computer. And we already know the problem with Windows Recall, you know, doing the screenshotting and all that. And yes, that's targeted towards Copilot PCs. And so right now they're saying to you that you do not have to turn on Windows Recall. And there's a bit of a problem with a lot of this. And this is the same concept of, you know, when Apple says, you know, we don't do client side scanning, but they never turned off Media Analysis D. In this case, we know specifically what the module is. It's called Media Analysis D. So Windows Recall has a similar problem here, because we always assume, and this is the wrong assumption to make, we always assume that when we turn on AI or on or off, that AI itself is some single piece, that if you turn AI off, then you're safe. Yeah. Isn't that the typical assumption? So you go to settings and say, I'm going to turn off AI. Okay, I'm turning off Apple Intelligence. I'm turning off my Windows Copilot. I'm not going to use Windows Copilot, so I must be safe. There's the problem, because people don't understand AI agents. So just because there's a main program that does this, it doesn't mean the agents turn off. As in the case of Apple, Media Analysis D is the old version of AI. It's very old now. So they can put in little modules that do this of any sort. And if you don't know what the modules are, how do you know what's going on? And I'm talking about the AI agent modules. So while currently they're saying that they can turn Windows Recall off when you decide to user-by-user basis, is there a possibility that they can turn it on remotely? Two, can it work quietly like a different kind of module that can be turned on because it was requested by a three-letter agency? You don't know this because the module is just there. So how do you know if it's turned on or off? how do you know if somebody can do this? Can somebody say, go to your Microsoft ID and go switch this on or off? If they can identify your specific computer, if they can identify your specific Microsoft ID. I mean, this is kind of the craziness because, as I told you, if you build in a capability to a computer, somebody's going to use it for some evil purpose. And that's the thing is, in the Microsoft case, they actually built this in. And I don't think they have good intentions with this, because they are basically changing the way we do computers. So they're saying you're going to use your computer as a duplicate of your brain. So I'm so frustrated with Windows right now. As I mentioned earlier, I bought a new computer and I installed the Linux on it in a dual boot. So now I'm running Windows and Linux on it. And I have to run Windows because I got to do these videos about Windows. So I have to have it.
Yeah.
And when I did that, I just was flabbergasted at the things that Microsoft did to make it so difficult to have a Linux partition unmolested. At every step, they're gonna try to just blast you away. Here's a typical example. You know, most of you don't know. Did you know that if you change hard drive on a new computer, it locks up the BIOS based on the TPM? It actually stores the ID of the hard drive in the TPM, and then I think it's based on the UID of the hard drive, and it interacts with the firmware and the TPM. So this is something I experimented with. You change hard drive locks up. I mean, can you imagine you're a standard tech guy doing normal things and you're doing, you know, you're testing computers and you change hard drive with different operating systems and all that. And you put in a new SSD drive on a new slot, or you move your slot from one M2 slot to the other. And that alone will cause it to lock up.
Wow.
And this is with BitLocker and Secure Boot disabled. I mean, this is Microsoft for you now. This is crazy stuff. And this is just the beginning of it. I mean, it's just crazy. So I actually made a dual boot video, and that's exactly the stuff I'm showing, is how to protect against that, because Microsoft will try to destroy you. It's crazy. What's happened to them? You know,
yeah, I mean, the amount of telemetry they've been collecting about you is insane. I mean, there's so much telemetry, and this is just taking it a step further, right?
You know, the Microsoft ID problem, and you mentioned it. It's like, you know, it's for my entire lifetime of using Windows, I've never used the Microsoft ID other than to occasionally test with it or download a new version of Windows. But I actually spend the time. First of all my Windows machines are local account. And then I spend the time to go into the registry. I go to the registry and wipe out any instance of my Microsoft ID. I mean, I go to that kind of detail. Obviously, I don't use OneDrive or any of this. And because I mean,
OneDrive is another story now that you mention it, right? Because
now they're
trying to force you to put all your data online.
They
don't even need you to run it locally on your computer with an AI. They're trying to get you to save all your files online, which is the default, which means they can scan it anyway. Is that right?
the craziness of this. And I mentioned BitLocker, right? So
yeah.
So I told you BitLocker isn't turned on. And it's tied to the TPM. So you say, oh, my computer is secure because I have TPM, because Microsoft says it's awesome. And it's BitLocker, so it's encrypted. And then they don't tell you that your BitLocker recovery keys are stored with your Microsoft ID in the, I forget the link, but it's in account, Microsoft.com/recovery or something like that, or BitLocker recovery. And then it actually stores your TPM identifier, your Microsoft ID, together with your BitLocker recovery keys. Now, how hard is it for a three-letter agency to say, oh, okay, let me recover the BitLocker keys. It's all in the cloud. I mean, what is going on? What is going on? I mean, you can't have your own computer anymore. So one of the things that Microsoft is doing is really saying, hey, this is not your computer. We ask you to pay for it, but it's our computer. We decide what you're going to put on it. You can't put Linux on there because we're going to kill your computer if you try that.
Yes, I mean, it's like you pay for this computer, but you don't own it. And what about your data, right? Because they're training their AI on your data. They're storing your data in the cloud. And then, like, who owns it? If I live in the EU and my data goes into OneDrive, is it actually stored in the EU or does it end up in the US, which has all kinds of other laws? And like you said, a three-letter agency could get access to it. It just seems really bad, right? Microsoft is probably one of the worst. What are your thoughts?
Oh, it was funny. I used to say Apple was the worst. And at the moment, it's shifting. And you know what? There's a bit of a... You have to understand what the general aims of these companies are. In the case of Microsoft, you got to look at Satya Nadella's claim to fame. You know, how has Microsoft pushed up in ranking and capitalization, market capitalization, which it's now the number two company? It surpassed Apple. How's that possible?
So, yeah, exactly.
So we know that NVIDIA is number one, and NVIDIA is number one because of AI. And it used to be Apple number one, and now Apple's number three, Microsoft's number two. Now, why do you think Microsoft is number two? I mean, you don't think Microsoft is selling that many more Windows 11, right?
No.
The question is that Satya Nadella became famous for moving Microsoft up in the rankings because of the cloud.
Okay.
So with Microsoft Azure and all that, and they've really pushed everything. So in the corporate world, they don't even keep computers in the corporate world anymore. Everything is in the cloud. And now their claim to fame is the cloud. So Microsoft AI linked to Copilot, everything is cloud-based. You know, that's why they're pushing OneDrive. They're pushing Windows Backup now, right? So all of this are encouraging you to put your stuff in the cloud. And at some point, you're just going to have the AI say, create me a station, a terminal running Windows. And you don't even need a computer. You just need a terminal. And then the AI does it for you and creates an interface for you. This is, of course, what's going to come up. As you know, you don't have to write software now with AI. AI can present you an interface for you on the fly. I mean, you can create a game in your head and just ask the AI to do it. So this is the kind of stuff that's going to run in the cloud, and the cloud will, you know, interface with you in that way. And then this is the shift. So currently the computer is storing your local information. And then when you get used to that, at some point somebody will say, hey, you know, let's start storing this remotely. And they're putting it in to OneDrive, right? So now a lot of you are saying, well, where's my Windows Recall stored? It could possibly be stored on OneDrive. And again, you don't know that because you don't know if there's any hidden OneDrive in there. So then there's a, you know, many, many years from now, maybe when I'm no longer in computers, somebody will discover that this actually been a duplicate record or maybe a main copy of your Windows Recall stuff elsewhere. And this is the new fear. You know, this is trending. And you know that it's easy to convince people, if you do it slowly, it's easy to convince people to give up on privacy and, you know, give up on anything. Just get them used to it.
So I've got to ask you, Rob, we always, when we do these things, it sounds so like negative, if you like, for lack of a better word. It sounds like there's no hope. But what can people do today? I'm assuming you're going to recommend that people move to Linux. And if so, which version of Linux? So rather, don't run Windows. Run Linux, I suppose, is what you're going to recommend. Is that right?
That's correct. So I got to look at a situation where there is no AI, at least an embedded AI. You can run your own AI, but not an AI that somebody puts on your device. So the only way I can do that or control it is Linux. Now, somebody will say, well, you can always put AI on Linux. Well, true, but you can always take it off too, because on Linux, you can't hide anything on Linux. Linux is open source. So if somebody says, well, you know, this version of Ubuntu now has AI, well, that's okay. I'm going to go to the processes and turn it off. It's not a big deal to do that on Linux because it's not hidden. On Windows, if they put an AI agent and you don't know what's running, then you pretty much, there's nothing you can do. You just have to accept whatever Microsoft does for you. Linux doesn't have that. So Linux is the safest option. So I always recommend to people to go to Linux. Now, if you can't go to Linux completely, at least dual boot. Now, why do I still allow dual boot as an option? Because there's software that doesn't run on Linux. Now, there's fewer of that. But, you know, some gamers say, okay, I want to run my Xbox game, you know, like Halo. I want to run it on Windows. where it's going to be less problematic. And okay, so do a boot. No. So what I've done in my case is I share my Linux Windows. So my Linux and Windows are running separately on my dual boot, but I share my data drive. So I have a big data drive. Let's say I have a 2 terabyte computer. I have over 1 terabyte for data shared between Windows and Linux, and they can share the data. So then I'm not losing space necessarily, and I have all this extra space, and I don't allocate so much space for the operating system, since you can store the data on the shared drive. And that way, then you can still transition from Windows to Linux in a controlled manner. You don't have to give up on your Adobe Photoshop or whatever, even though there are many Linux equivalents you can use that, you know, are certainly good options. There are very few software issues now, you know, on Linux. I mean, just about everything works on Linux now. So it's a matter of brand specific things. Like, you know, I like to use the DaVinci Resolve on Windows because it's buggy on Linux. So aside from that, I really have no reason to use Windows.
Yeah, I think that's always the problem, right? With people who want to move to Linux, it's like, yeah, it's nice to use Linux, but what applications does it support? So, I mean, like a lot of people will use Microsoft Word, but there's equivalents on Linux, correct?
Yeah. And, you know, you can use Microsoft Office 365 on Linux. I mean, it's just a cloud, so you can do that. But, you know, I find that for 99% of the people, who really needs to use anything sophisticated on Word? I'm still using the same old stuff, you know, from Word 2007 or whatever. I use LibreOffice. It's free. So it's, you know, pre-installed on Linux, and you don't really have to pay for anything. It's just the part that people forget. You have to pay Microsoft to use so much software on Windows, but on Linux, everything is free. You know, what do you have to pay for? There's nothing. So it's such a easy movement. And to be honest, you know, whether I'm doing spreadsheets or typing, and I do a lot of, you know, writing, obviously for what we do on YouTube, I write a lot of stuff. And what's different with using LibreOffice versus, you know, Word? What really is Word offering me? Not much. So, and browser is the same. I do programming. I use VS Code on Linux. It's running the same way on Windows. What do I need? In fact, a lot of the development work now, if you're a software developer, you know, why are you even on Windows? I mean, there's so many options. Unless you're programming specifically because you're using .NET or something specific to Windows, why do you need to even do that on Windows? I mean, AI developers, as you know, program mostly on Linux.
So Rob, perhaps you can get a bit more technical now for people who are technical about TPM. And you've mentioned this in other places, EKI. Can you explain what this is all about and why it's important from a privacy point of view?
So the idea of a security chip, and this is, again, the same on Apple's using Secure Enclave, Google uses a Titan M2 chip, and then on Windows is using the TPM. TPMs are basically hardwired. It's part of the SoC on a typical Windows computer, but actually there are removable TPMs. You can actually put TPMs on some older computer. You can actually buy a TPM chip and put it on there. And you can't put this on USB. They don't have versions of USB versions of this. The TPM is typically permanent and hardwired in most cases on the new computer, just like on a Titan M2 chip or a Secure Enclave. And as I said, the TPM chip is actually an identifier. So one of the things that people don't know is that you can interact with the TPM. And one of the ways you interact with the TPM is to get the public key that identifies your specific TPM, and it's called EKI. So you can query a TPM and say, what is your EKI? So the EKI is called the endorsement key. So your TPM will actually reveal the endorsement key if you ask it. And the endorsement key is fixed. It's fixed to your TPM in your current TPM setup, which actually is an identifier because it's kind of like a similar concept as an IMEI on a phone. So if your phone is queried by Google or Apple and you say, well, what is the IMEI of the phone? Like your carrier can actually query that and find the IMEI. It's the same exact concept here with the EKI. So somebody can, if they know you have a TPM chip, and obviously the Windows 11 computers require that, so all Windows 11 will have a TPM chip. This is one of the reasons you should stick to Windows 10. This is that alone. You should stay to Windows 10 because you're not going to be queried for TPM because Windows 10 doesn't have that code. So you get a TPM chip identifying you with this EKI, and this is the worst part. So now we already know that the EKI is attached to BitLocker recovery keys, and it's attached to Microsoft ID. So they know the combination of, you know, the specific identifier to your device using BitLocker and how it ties to your Microsoft ID. The problem is it goes beyond that. And the little feature that they added is called attestation. So any app, so if you're a Windows app, you can actually invoke this API on the TPM. It's called attestation API. And the attestation can attest, meaning you're asking the TPM to attest that it is you. And how did they know that? They can say, you can say, I require to for this software to run that you're running this version of Windows, that you're running this kind of hardware that has to be a specific brand with a special configuration. That is part now of something called attestation, which is actually being implemented even on the Google side. And actually, Google is planning on Google Safety Net, I think, is going, I forget which part is going to be doing the attestation here, but they can actually find out if you're running a specific OS, what your hardware setup is, and then report that through attestation to say, yep, you are in fact on an acceptable operating system, and the TPM is going to guarantee that. So basically, the TPM now is used to spy on your configuration. Now, this alone is a problem because if you say, oh, I'm going to run Linux, well, the computer can detect that you're running Linux. If you're on a Google Pixel, for example, or some other device, it can attest that you're running a Google OS versus a de-Googled OS. So, and in the case of a Windows computer, it will obviously know you're running Windows 10, but it knows that from the Microsoft ID and all that anyway. But it can actually detect other aspects of your computer that has nothing to do with your Microsoft installation, just spying on your hardware configuration and all that. And that's the reporting element. And any software can call and invoke this API through this attestation thing. This is, again, one of the scary aspects of privacy invasion by identifying you.
So where's this going? Is this where you see it, where the governments or a three-letter agency may say, I want to know what that person's doing on their computer, and I want to know the details of their computer, something like that?
Right. But as you know, they're already implementing this in various ways. For example, the banks require attestation saying you have to be using a valid OS, a valid device with certain features, and they're already doing that. So can you imagine now, you know, having a social score, and if you're trying to evade that social score because you're trying to use some device because you're a hacker and you want to create some hacking device that they can't spy on, they can even stop that and say, your device is not matching the attestation requirements. Therefore, we ban you from access to your bank account. So this is the stuff that can actually be pretty aggressive with, you know, having control over a population.
So do you see it going in the next, I don't know how long, months, could be years, that digital ID is going to be implemented and then they're going to stop you from doing certain things? I mean, the example that's always used is like in China, social score, and you can't do certain things, or they restrict you from doing whatever they think you shouldn't be doing if you're a so-called bad person. Do you see that coming to the West as well?
Well, they're doing that to some extent now. So this is not really a secret. You know, they've been doing debanking in the US, the UK, So they can debank you already now. And that's kind of a subtle push towards social score. And with the limitations of attestation with the TPM and all that, your computer becomes your digital ID. Now, this is a bigger concept here that people don't understand. And as a privacy guy, I'm always aware and controlling of the IMEI on my phone, the IMSI, you know, all of these identifiers, the Microsoft ID, I'm sorry, the Google ID, the Apple ID, and all that on the phone. And similarly, I do not like a computer that is tracking a Microsoft ID, because if I go on the internet, then, and the Microsoft ID is known, then it's like Google ID, as you know, the Google ID can track everything you're doing on the internet. And in fact, the Google ID is sent with every transaction on the internet. You go to a website and they know the Google ID, and it's tracked by Google Analytics, and they can track every click. So Microsoft can get their hands in that in the same way, using the same kind of techniques. And they can be just as powerful as Google is in tracking everything you do on the internet. And now, you know what happens in an authoritarian system, this kind of information then can be used to control.
So do you see that governments will do kind of what they're trying to do in the UK? And I believe other countries already do this, digital ID running on your device. They can scan what you're doing. They can see what you're buying. I mean, people are talking about like carbon score and all this kind of stuff already happening, and they're going to limit what you can do. You see that's where it's going?
It's already doing that. One of the things that is interesting is we're always looking at China as the example, and we don't even realize that in countries like countries in the Middle East, they're doing like biometric scanning now. So can you imagine now that biometric scan on your computer is stored on the TPM? So now they want to know who it is they're dealing with, and they can, you know, again, doing attestation saying, okay, well, I want to link it to Windows Hello via biometrics, and I require that you be using Windows Hello and then biometrics so that I can do a full social score on you. And then countries where they want to track all this, they can't. And this is the stuff I want to disable. I don't want any part of this.
And the way to do that is to run Linux.
So currently we're allowed to install Linux and evade all that. But through attestation, somebody could lock it up at some point. And some services could be locked from us, as they do with the banking side now. Fortunately, the banking limitation with attestation is something of a more of an EU. I don't know if it's done in the UK, but the EU has this attestation thing on phones. The US banks are not doing that. You can use any device and they don't have any limitations. So the Google phones, for example, work fine in the US, but some banks do not allow it in the EU.
Rob, Linux on a PC makes sense, right? I mean, hopefully you're going to get a AMD or a Intel chip rather than these new ARM chips from Microsoft. So it makes it easier to boot into Linux, especially like if you've got an older Windows 10 computer, you can just run Linux on it as an example. But what about phones? Do you recommend Linux phones? What do you do with a phone?
Google's going to put in this attestation thing. In fact, they already announced it, where certain apps will be required to attest that you're running on an OS that they approve. So certain apps are not going to run until they attest. So that's the question. And I think what's going to happen now is certain apps are going to stop running on a Google OS if the app maker decides to use this attestation requirement. And this then going to be tied to the security chip. I don't know exactly how that's going to work yet. I don't have all the details of it. But at the moment, I think we can override it if apps do not do this safety net requirement and don't partake in this attestation thing. So not all apps will have this problem. And I don't think that Google can force it, because all the apps in China have no attestation. So I don't think they're willing to dump all of China here. So I think we're going to have the ability to use a non-Google or a de-Googled OS on a phone. So that's still going to be likely a possibility for the long run, at least for now.
So Rob, I really want to thank you for sharing. As always, it's kind of scary to listen to you because, you know, you're seeing what's coming down the line and the worries when it comes to privacy. But I just want to point everyone to your channel. So you've got a whole bunch of videos on your channel. You cover a whole bunch of things. At the moment, you're doing a Windows series. Is that right?
That's right.
So you're going to show people how to dual boot. You've done that already. By the time this video goes out, you are talking about the best versions of Linux. You're telling people how they can better get better privacy. And you've been doing this for a long time. I know that.
And then I made a video about the TPM, the security chips. And then later on, I'll talk about security chips in general for all other platforms. I don't have all the information about all that yet. So that'll come later.
So Rob, as always, I want to thank you for sharing, making this freely available on the internet and, you know, teaching so many people around the world. So for everyone who's watching, please go and sub to Rob's channel. Fantastic information there. Go and show the support. Go and show the love. Rob, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you for inviting me, David.